You are listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network. This is USL Radio on the Sports Podcasting Network, the longest running podcast entirely dedicated to the USL.
And welcome to USL Radio. I am Dwayne Rollins along with Kevin Laramie. Kevin, how are you today?
I am doing great, and I have to say I am doing a lot better than the FC Montreal. FC Montreal, another difficult game, a defeat late in the match last Saturday against New York Red Bulls 2, Dwayne, in their new home, though the Saint-Claude Robillard, the old home of the Montreal Impact pre-2008, is now the new home of FC Montreal in USL. First game, I'm going to talk about the facilities a little later on, the new infrastructures, but FC Montreal lost 1-0, a late goal by New York Red Bulls 2. In that game, Montreal deserved a lot better. They were trying to go for the win. They're tired of having no result, and we'll talk about it later, Dwayne. But yeah, it's a tough 2016 season for the FC Montreal.
Yeah, another young team. I'm seeing the same thing here in my backyard with TFC 2. When you look across the country, however, with the Whitecaps and their success out there, if you look at the lineup and the approach that the Whitecaps made, compare it to Montreal and Toronto, they have gone a little bit older. They're not old, but they have gone a little bit older, and that's really showing in the results with the Whitecaps doing well. Time will tell what the better approach is in terms of development, but certainly a struggle for the two Eastern Canadian teams early on in the USL season. Kevin, today, though, we're going to talk a lot about the U.S. Open Cup. We're going to focus on the USL's participation in the U.S. Open Cup and talk in general about the tournament itself. We had Josh Hakala on, who, for those that follow U.S. soccer, you'll know that name. He is the founder of thecup.us, one of the foremost experts on the U.S. Open Cup, probably the foremost expert on the U.S. Open Cup out there, Kevin.
It's the best place to know everything about the Cup. Doing this job, I've been following the U.S. Open Cup for 5 years. And thecup.us is the place I go for the bracket, for knowledge, for game times where they'd be broadcasted, sometimes even broadcasted on that website. So thecup.us is literally the place to go to know everything that needs to be known on that tournament.
All right, let's bring Josh on now. Then Kevin and I will come back and we'll talk about the USL's draw for round three of the Cup.
SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network. Visit us, sportspodcastingnetwork.com.
And welcome back. And Josh Hakala joins us on the line. He is, of course, the founder of thecup.us, one of the foremost experts on the U.S. Open Cup out there. Josh, thanks for taking some time today.
Yeah, anytime.
Wanted to have you on to have a general conversation about the Cup early on in its run right now, and particularly because I think it's the most exciting time, because you bring the USL teams in, you bring the NASL teams in, you have always that potential for an upset there. Obviously, the amateur teams are still floating around. That's just in a general way. Can you give us what some of the highlights of the second round that just completed were, and what to look forward, look towards moving forward?
Well, we do have some underdogs. Of course, you could say that at this point everyone's an underdog since they're all lower division teams. But at this point, we talk about the amateur teams as sort of being the underdogs at this point. The Des Moines Mass, who seem to upset a pro team every other year, it's a really solid PDL team, and they beat the Tulsa Roughnecks 2-0. And that was the seventh time that they have beaten a pro team, which is the second most of any amateur team in the modern era. So they just add to their impressive resume. The Lansdowne Boys from New York City, they, in their first appearance, have made a nice little splash from the Cosmopolitan Soccer League, and the fabled Cosmopolitan Soccer League. They've been playing soccer there for a really long time, and the boys went into Pittsburgh and beat them 2-0, and that was a pretty big highlight. And also another upset that we had was out west, with the Los Angeles Wolves from this upstart UPSL league. They're sort of everyone's under the USASA umbrella, but this UPSL league is the United Premier Soccer League. They're based in Los Angeles, and it's kind of like a mini PDL or a mini NPSL, if you will. And they have some really good teams in the Los Angeles area, and they're expanding out to Arizona and Nevada. And the Wolves beat the Orange County Blues in the USL team in penalty kicks, which unfortunately for Blues fans is becoming a bit of a trend. They have lost to amateur teams 3 years in a row, so that is not good for the old resume.
The relative success of the amateur teams, is this just a nice story that we should just enjoy on its own merits, or does it say something about the development pyramid and the identification abilities of professional clubs in the United States?
I think just enjoy it. I mean, I don't think there's anything to be said. I mean, if we had a round where, you know, all the amateur teams just wiped out the USL and the NASL teams, okay, you might have something there. But for the most part, this is pretty normal. I mean, you get, you know, three or four amateur teams and make a run, and sometimes it works out just by the way of the draw that two amateur teams will play each other. It's pretty rare, but it happens. You know, like we had with Sounders, the Sounders under 23 team and the Kitsap Pumas, both in the Pacific Northwest. They drew each other, and so the Kitsap Pumas won the game, so they'll be in the third round. So it's really just, I don't know. I always think of it, it's the game of soccer. And in soccer, anything can happen. You know, you get those games that you always hear about where one team outshoots the other one, you know, 31-1, but that one goal went in and they won 1-0. So it's that kind of game, and I think that's what makes the tournament so great, is anything can happen. And unless we see really drastic trends when it comes to the result, I don't think it's anything to worry about. I don't think we should blow up the USL if they lose a few games here and there.
The US Open Cup is the oldest tournament in North America. What can you tell us that's new with the tournament in 2016? It's an ever-evolving tournament with rules change depending on the team and all the amateur teams on that level. What can you tell us about the tournament in 2016?
Well, it definitely does. It has evolved over the last 103 years pretty drastically. But in this modern era, you know, I think they're just trying to find the right formula that kind of works for our massive country and trying to get it to work to be a financial success as well as just a logistical success. You know, it's really hard. I think a lot of people say, I get a lot of tweets and things that people say, well, I wish they just did a blind draw like they do in England. Well, I mean, look at England, and you can drive from the southernmost point of England to the northernmost point in England in the same time that it takes you to drive from southern Michigan to the upper peninsula of Michigan. So, I mean, it's a big travel issue, and so we'll never have exactly that unless they get some sort of massive travel sponsor that's willing to, like, foot the bill for all travel. But it's really difficult to pull that off. I don't think you'd want to send an amateur team from Los Angeles out to Portland, Maine to play a game midweek. You know, all the logistics to that just would be a nightmare. But it's really every year they're kind of tweaking things, and really the main reason is because there's so many teams that are added. You know, once in a while you might lose a team, but it, really with the way that expansion is going with Major League Soccer and the USL and the NASL, there's always new teams, and so you kind of have to adjust the numbers every year because they want to have all the pro teams involved, and so they have to kind of change the number of amateur teams to make the numbers work out.
When you're looking at the end of this tournament, the trophy, the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup, and the golden ticket for the CONCACAF Champions League, how important is that aspect of that tournament, the CONCACAF Champions League spot? Because it's like we have the FA Cup in mind. We're looking at the way this tournament is going with the bracket style. And one loss, well, you're gone. And with the MLS going in later on and winning, usually, this tournament since MLS has been created, do you see a foreseeable future where an ASL team, USL team, or even an amateur team getting that ticket? And is it the ultimate reward of this tournament, that ticket?
It really is. And I think that's another thing that people love to banter about on social media, is how to fix the tournament, how to improve it. And one of the things that's always brought up is, well, make the prize money $1 million. Well, first of all, that's easy for you to say, but, you know, just you have to find $1 million, first of all. But the prize money is $250,000, and, you know, that's a nice chunk of change. But if you split it, you know, on a 25-man roster, you know, it's like $10,000 a piece, and, you know, depending on how the team works that out. So, I mean, it's not life-changing. You know, it's a nice bonus, but I don't think that that's ever going to be a huge motivator for players. I mean, it'll help a little bit. But I think that CONCACAF Champions League spot, when they added that a few years back to the winner of the Open Cup, it was like, I want to say it was 2007 was when they introduced that. They when they did that, I think that changed a lot. And so many teams can look at the Open Cup now as it's the shortest route to the Champions League, and they can get into the Champions League. And for the lower division teams, this has always been their everything. This has always been their biggest tournament, because if you make a run in the Open Cup, and this is, you know, sort of sad to say, I love the USL, I love the NASL, but really, if you really break it down, if you go and win the Open Cup, and then you win the NASL title or the USL title, what are fans really going to remember out of that? They're going to win that. They're going to remember that Open Cup title. And like the, you know, I don't know how many people remember how many titles, the USL titles that the Rhinos have won. And, mm-hmm. you know, a fair number. But that one title that they won in 1999 in the US Open Cup, they'll remember that forever. And so I think that it's become a huge tournament for lower division teams. And it's become more important to MLS teams. And I think that it's shown with the rosters that they put out. It's a lot more quality than we've seen, you know, maybe a decade ago. You know, also the depth of the roster certainly has helped in that. But I think it's really improved the tournament, and I think it's a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, Pat Onstad is as known for winning the 1999 U.S. Open Cup as he is for the MLS Cups that he won, for sure. And in terms of the prize money, I think that having worked for a semi-pro league, I can tell you that $250,000 is probably about what the operating budget is for most of those clubs over the annual. So that's a nice chunk of change, for sure.
It would definitely. Well, that's what the amateur team. I've worked for a couple of different amateur teams over the years, and basically, one of them was the Michigan Bucks, and I remember them saying, you know, probably 15 years ago, when they were hosting MLS teams semi-regularly, like they played the Crew one year, they played the Metro Stars, and I remember them saying that we make the Open Cup such a priority because we bring a Major League Soccer team to town. That basically like sets our operating budget for the entire year with that one game. And so for an amateur team, getting to the third round, getting to the fourth round can make a really big difference, and to have the Major League Soccer teams kind of sitting out there as a carrot for these lower division teams in the fourth round, it makes it exciting for the tournament and exciting for the team.
Josh, when you're looking at this year in the U.S. Open Cup, you mentioned Lansdowne Boys, a new team. Is there any upset alert going on now and going into third round coming very shortly?
Well, there's a few teams out there that I think I think the boys have their work cut out for them playing at Rochester. I mean, that's going to be a really tough one. The Harrisburg City Islanders are known as giant killers themselves, but you know they're certainly not unbeatable, and they're going to be traveling down to Chattanooga to take on Chattanooga FC. That could be a game to watch out for. You know, really, when you get down to USL versus NASL, I can't really call them upsets. You know, I mean, the leagues are so similar as far as talent goes. You know, you might have one team that's just a little bit better than the other, but I wouldn't be, you know, screaming that a USL, even though it's a division, it's, you know, labeled a Division III league, I wouldn't call it a huge upset if they were to beat an NASL team. But, and that sort of works the same way with the amateur teams, too. But those are pretty much the ones to look out for. I would say San Antonio FC traveling to Des Moines to take on the Des Moines Menace. We know that the Menace have pulled off more than their share of pro team upsets, and some of them have been Division II teams, and they actually have a winning record against Division II teams. They're 4-3 against Division II pro teams, and I think their record against Division III pro teams is like 2-1-1 with a penalty kick win. So this is an amateur team that knows how to win against opponents that are in a higher level, and San Antonio FC will be a tough one for them at home. So there's that, and I think that the Chattanooga game could be a little bit dangerous. But then we also have one more. We have an all amateur matchup with the two UPSL teams, Los Angeles Wolves and La Máquina, and they are those two. I think the winner of those two could give LA Galaxy a little run in the next round. It should be fun.
the Galaxy have always traditionally been a fits and starts in this tournament too. I'm curious about what your position is on the USL 2 teams, the MLS reserve teams not being in the tournament this year. Did you think that that was the right call?
Yeah, I think it is. I do understand the other side, though. I think that you in some of these markets, they are separate from the teams that they represent. So, for instance, like the Bethlehem Steel, you know, while they are in eastern Pennsylvania, you know, Bethlehem is quite a bit north of Philadelphia. So you're not really overlapping with markets there. It's a pretty separate market. So from a tournament perspective, it's unfortunate that a team like Bethlehem Steel, those fans in that area won't get to experience Open Cup soccer because they're affiliated with the union. But at the same time, I think that the most important thing and the reason why they made this rule was because they just didn't want even to show the possibility of, you know, some shadiness going on with teams who are owned by higher division teams being told how to manage their teams. And that, you know, while that probably would very rarely happen, it's just, you know, in a competition, you just want everything to be on the up and up. And I think that if you take that out of the equation, then there's just, you can't say anything. There's no one that's going to say, well, you know, they took their star player out at halftime. That seems a little odd, you know, and things like that. I think you eliminate a lot of things that way. If you take away teams that are owned by a higher level team. So I think it was the right move, and it's good for the tournament overall. But it's worth pointing out, by the way, that most of the teams that are the two teams, or the, you know, the reserve team, or however you want to call them, most of them are in the same city, or at least the same market as the other teams. So the Seattle Sounders 2, Portland Timbers 2, you know, they're all in the same. So it's not like that fan base is really going to miss out on Open Cup soccer. The senior team is going to be participating in the tournament. So there are exceptions, obviously, with Bethlehem Steel, but I think overall, I think it was a good decision.
A little outside the box for this question, the United States is unique in the sense that they have multiple countries in their pyramid. And I'm just wondering whether you could ever foresee a day where, like in Wales, you'll see those teams that are non-American teams participating in this tournament, or will this always just remain a U.S.-only kind of event?
I think that it probably will remain we've got 103 years of history behind it. I have a hard time believing that they would go against that. And what I think would be more likely is that that Canada would step up and do their own. And I would like to see that. I would like to see a little Canadian Open Cup. You know, they've got a developing, you know, amateur system and some semi-pro teams and things like that. That could be interesting. And I'd like to see that more than anything else. But one fun fact is we have had Canadian teams in the Open Cup. But back in the 1920s, they kind of snuck in. It was a team called Walkerville FC, and they were based in, and also the Windsor Rovers, I think it was. They were based in Ontario, and if you're familiar with the Detroit area, like Windsor, Ontario is just like right across the bridge. And so those teams participated in Detroit-based leagues. So they got into the tournament because of their affiliation with the Detroit league that they were playing in. And so I have never been able to find exactly when they put the kibosh on that little loophole, but yeah, in the 1920s, it was 1922, I think, was the first year that we saw a couple Canadian teams sneak in, and we haven't seen it really since. A couple times in the 20s, and then they did away with it.
All right, fair enough. Final question to wrap up the show, and then we'll let you get on your way. When will we see another Rochester Rhinos? Do you think that that's something that will happen, or do you think that this is MLS's to lose for several years more?
I think that the gap has widened a little bit in between MLS and maybe the lower divisions, mainly because I think that the depth of the rosters has gotten so big. I think that the MLS team can get away with fielding, you know, maybe their best 11, there would be a gap, but really if they put out their like reserves, they could be on equal footing depending on the team they play. But I think that people need to, they don't have to look back far to see you know, lower division teams that have made a run, and it's the sport of soccer. Like, anything can happen, and that's what makes it so great. And I think we saw in 2008 the Charleston Battery made the championship game. I mean, they were a couple bounces of the ball away from winning the whole thing. And in 2011, the Richmond Kickers, who were in the USL in the third division, they were playing the Chicago Fire in the semifinals. You know, they lost, but ball bounces, they're in favor in that game, and they find themselves in the championship game. So it's a sport that, we're like I said, anything can happen, and I'm sure that at some point someone will go on a magical run, and we'll see it again. But when, I always get the question of when. I'm like, I don't know. It's like, that's what makes it great. Yeah. You never know when it's going to happen. So we'll have to just watch it and see what happens with some of these USL and NASL teams, and maybe we'll even see an amateur team get past the fourth round. We have not seen that yet in the modern era. So we'll see what happens.
As someone who enjoys watching chaos, I would love to see the New York Cosmos go on a big run one day, just to see the reaction on social media and that.
Right, and that would be good too. But also, one thing for this year that if you're into Open Cup chaos, I would be curious to see if for some reason the Minnesota United was able to make a run and win the tournament, what would happen with the Champions League spot? Would they give it to the MLS team the following year, or how would that all work? It's something that we saw in 2008 when the Seattle Sounders were moving up and they were in the USL and they got to the semifinals that year. And I remember all of us here were thinking, this is great. I can't wait to see how they work this out. And unfortunately, the Sounders lost in the Final Four. But it was definitely a good discussion, and it'd be a good talk radio topic for you as well. Huh. What should happen if Minnesota United win?
All right, we all like to watch the underdog, so we'll be cheering that one on. Josh, we do thank you for your time. That's thecup.us. Hopefully we'll touch base down the line. Thanks again.
All right, my pleasure.
You are listening to the Sports Podcasting Network. You're a big soccer fan? ESPN is the place to be. USL Radio, NASL Nightcap, Two Solitude Soccer Podcasts, Off the Woodworks, Ours is the Fury, 2S Extra, the rest of the story. ESPN is the place to be.
Thanks again to Josh for taking some time today. Kevin, everyone loves cups, the magic of the cup, right? It's an exciting time, and I think especially in the U.S. pyramid, it is something that really is valuable in the sense that it gives a very rare chance for the different levels of the pyramid, the soccer wars, to have like a direct comparison to talk about for the year, and it kind of fuels that moving forward. So I'm excited to watch the next round of this cup. In particular, I'm excited to see how the NASL does against the USL. We all know what happened last year with the USL dominating that matchup, and I'm sure the NASL teams are going to be eager to try and reverse that trend.
No, it's exactly what it is. Now, we're coming into the third round, which is June 1st in the US Open Cup. The NASL teams entered that tournament. The USL team did in the second round, NASL in the third round. There's a couple of amateur teams playing against each other, so that's kind of cool because there'll be an amateur team in the fourth round, which is not the case every year. Fourth round, this is where the MLS team comes in, and it starts June 13th. But June 1st, Dwayne, next week, well, a few days from now, that's where we're going to see USL on USL violence, like you mentioned off air. I really like your analogy. USL and ASL, we're going to have some amateur team and PSL teams involved too. The third round of this tournament is where you see usually upsets. If there's an upset to be made, this is there, because this is where the story gets written. If there's an amateur team after the third round, it becomes interesting. That's where a Cal FC made it to the fourth round to play a MLS team a few years back. One of the most famous amateur teams to do so, back then coached by Eric Wynalda. So when you have like the round three right now, the Rhinos against the Lansdowne Boys, a mainstay of the USL playing against an amateur team from the region of New York. It's interesting. It's great. It's for the amateur teams or the smaller NPSL teams. That game represents the culmination of months of planning, of dreams. Imagine that amateur club has sometimes walk-in players too that just walk in, do the tryout, make the team. Like not even the year before, it was maybe not even playing to that level. And now they're playing in NASL or MLS team maybe even if they win that game. For them, it's like the Jamie Vardy story in a nutshell condensed.
Yeah. Look, you mentioned the Lansdowne boys. That is the only amateur versus USL matchup in this next round. Rochester, of course, the last team not from MLS to win this trophy back in 1999. The other matchup that's really intriguing as a, you know, USL as favorite is that Chattanooga MPSL team, which those that don't follow the lower leagues in the fourth tier in the U.S. might not be aware of the Chattanooga story. That's one of those teams that has the big fan following, kind of a fan-driven experience there, a team that's been very successful at that level over the next couple of years. They're a very ambitious club at that level. So that matchup with Harrisburg is an interesting one, and you can be assured that Chattanooga is going to go in there with a giant chip on their shoulder, because a lot of those teams that are playing that level don't like the USL because of its attachment with MLS. And we won't get into it, but we all understand that soccer wars battle, the pro rel and all that sort of jazz. So there is a bit of a chip shoulder matchup there. But the real battleground, I think, Kevin, is that NESL versus USL. For similar reasons, because of the philosophical differences between the leagues and the fan bases. The NASL takes great pride in calling USL a farm league, farm teams, et cetera, but then again, those farm teams handed it to them last year. So is it really a difference in levels? That's the question that we have to ask ourselves.
Yeah, and the other interesting topic here is the fact that this year the USL 2 teams, the MLS affiliates from the USL are not available, are not allowed to play in this year's tournament. So Red Bulls 2, Seattle 2, LA 2 are not here this year. Last year they were, and it really made that tournament even bigger. It made there a lot more teams, because it's talking about it's more than a handful of teams. It was around 10, I think, last year. So it's a lot of teams that are not there this year. You have some U23s. Basically, they just don't want a team of a farm team, like you mentioned, to be in that tournament and have players coming from the big team being able to go down and play and be able to have better results. So it's like a moratorium on that situation right now. They're still figuring out how they're going to address that situation going forward, having more and more USL team having affiliated MLS clubs. So that's, it's not going to go away anytime soon. So they're going to have to find a way to lay some ground rules, because they're going to need their team, those teams in the tournament, because the idea of the tournament is to have every professional teams, USL teams, even two teams are professional. They should be in that tournament. So they are figuring out a way to include all professional teams in the US Open Cup.
Yeah, I understand, and Josh nailed it, I think, in the interview. I understand sort of the optics issue around having the two teams in the draw. You know, one solution that I can't get past is perhaps having a separate tournament for the two teams. You could perhaps include the three Canadian teams in that as well, because they are excluded from the Canadian, the Voyageurs Cup, from any Open Cup competition up here when it will get started. They will very likely be excluded from that for the very same reasons that we're talking about in the U.S. So that might be something, so that during the U.S. Open Cup dates that the two teams have their own separate draw, for at least to have some form of competition that's out there. I don't mind that idea. I don't know how much interest or drive there would be to have that happen, but certainly I think that might be valuable for sort of a measuring of USL power within MLS. But that's kind of a different topic for a different day. Let's run down the matchups in the third round for the USL teams. There are 13 teams in the draw for the USL. Just quickly, in terms of a league versus matchup, you've got 8 against the NASL, 1 against the MPSL. I mentioned the Chattanooga matchup, 2 against PDL teams, 1 the amateur matchup, the Lansdowne boys matchup, and 1 USL v. USL matchup. That is Arizona versus Colorado Springs, Kevin. Then the USL and USL violence matchup. Go ahead. Any thoughts before I just list the games?
Say, I'm going to watch Frank Yallop coach. It's been a while. So I'm going to watch that Arizona-Colorado Springs game for sure.
Yeah, well, maybe he's getting his resume warmed up. There's an opening in MLS now at Houston, as we all know. But that's a different topic for our show tomorrow, perhaps.
Owen Cole, what's going on? What happened there? But that's another story for another day.
Yes, we'll be sure to talk about that tomorrow on 2S Extra. But on today's USL Radio, Richmond versus Fort Lauderdale is the first NASL matchup. That's, I think, winnable for Richmond. You got Charleston versus Jacksonville, Harrisburg, Chattanooga, Charlotte versus Carolina, Tampa Bay, the Rowdies versus Cincinnati, an interesting one there with the success Cincinnati's had early. Louisville, Indy, that's kind of a fun one too. St. Louis, Minnesota. We talked about in the interview sort of the interesting thing that might happen if Minnesota were to win this tournament. They're a bit underachieving in the NASL season right now, so perhaps that this might be a driving force for them. You got Miami versus Williamsburg or Wilmington. Williamsburg, that's a different place altogether. the Sharks.
You're mixing Harrisburg and Wilmington.
Yes, the Hammerheads will be playing against Miami.
Yeah.
A beatable, winnable game, too, because Miami is at the bottom of the NASL. And I think that that's really interesting to me is how the bottom NASL teams fare against mid-level USL teams. That's going to really tell you a lot about the level. Anyway, Des Moines versus San Antonio, that's a PDL team. Des Moines, Arizona, Colorado Springs, we mentioned the USL and USL violence there. And Sacramento.
And the sirens are already coming for that USL and USL violence.
I know. I got to get my studio better soundproof. But at any rate, and Sacramento versus my favorite name in U.S. soccer, the Kitsap Pumas. That's a PDL team up there in the Seattle area. So those are your matchups. Any jump out at you there? Oh, and I forgot the most important one of all.
You forgot the
Rail versus the Energy, the Oklahoma City Derby, folks. I don't know how much attention is going to be playing there if they're in the NBA final, but nonetheless, an exciting time for Oklahoma City soccer fans.
Yeah, they're not going to beat Toronto. Well, at least not if last night was any indication.
Still have to win four. Cubs have to win four, but that's a different topic.
But Rayo and Oklahoma City Energy, that's going to be the battle, right? That's what fans have been waiting for ever since they knew that there was going to be an NSL team in their city. Well, only one plays in the city limits, but let's not get into pedantics here. Rayo Energy, it's a derby. It's the new kid on the block versus the three-year-old kid on the block. It's the new guy with the NASL, with the backing of a, not necessarily big club, but every backing of a European club, and Oklahoma Energy, their own identity with their MLS partners. So, no, Energy FC will be interesting to see against the Rayo for sure. It's a derby, and it's, well, we've been waiting for this game for a few months now.
Should be fun. All right, quickly, before we move on and talk a bit about FC Montreal, these would be the MLS matchups if the USL teams were to win. If Charleston wins its matchup, they would play Orlando. If Louisville were to win, they would play either Chicago or Indy 11. NYCFC is matched up against Cosmos. No one cares about that in a USL radio situation. Anyway, Harrisburg, if they get pie, Chattanooga would draw the Philadelphia Union. Carolina would draw New England if they were – Charlotte. I'm mixing my teams up here as I look at it. Charlotte Independence would draw New England if they were to get through. Cincinnati, Columbus, that would be a fun little one, an Ohio Derby there. That could be a potential matchup in the fourth round. The Rhinos, if they get by their amateur team, would be likely to match up against the Red Bulls. And it's just going down here, Richmond, D.C. That one's happened a few times in the past. Another possibility this year because of the regional setup of this tournament. If St. Louis wins over Minnesota, they would play Sporting Kansas City. The winner of the Rayo versus Energy Derby will play FC Dallas. Houston will draw San Antonio or Des Moines. If Des Moines were to upset them, they would deny San Antonio the chance in a Texas Derby there. Colorado, they could have a Colorado Derby, the Colorado Springs or Arizona, and the all-USL matchup. The winner of that will get Colorado, so there will be a USL team playing the Red Hot Rapids.
And you could have an Ohio Derby, Dwayne. If Cincinnati beats Tampa Bay, they're facing Columbus, so it will be a Columbus, Ohio versus Cincinnati, Ohio.
Exactly. Wilmington, if they get by Miami, would play Real Salt Lake. That's kind of not real geographical there, but anyway. The Galaxy, they're against an amateur team because, of course, they are. The Sounders.
That's so MLS, Dwayne. Galaxy having an advantage? Jeez.
Yeah, there you go. The Sacramento, if they get by Kitsap Pumas, would play Seattle. And the other draw in the fourth round is all MLS. It's Portland, San Jose. All right, that's your fourth round. Like I said, fun times. We all enjoy it. I dream of the day that up here in Canada, where I am, we have something similar. We're getting there. It's going to take some time, but nonetheless, this is something that we can watch and enjoy in the meantime, Kevin. But let's move on now and talk about the team in your backyard, which is winless still. What's going on?
Well, it's tough times. FC Montreal 0-8 in 2016. If you remember going back to 2015, their first year in the USL, first year in history, the top team of the academy, second team of the Montreal Impact, 0-5 before they got the results and their win, and they had good stretch in August and September, more in August when they were 6 wins in a row. They were the hottest team in the league. They were climbing the standings a little bit, at least bridging that gap. But now 0-8, bottom of the East. They're struggling this year. A lot of injuries, to be fair. A lot of injuries of the main club too that would basically gave them no reinforcement when they needed them, especially in the striker position. Alessandro Rigi, Sean Jolie were injured. Even other players were injured as well for FC Montreal. There's a Jacques Amand story. Jacques Amand was released by the club mid-May a few weeks ago because of visa issues. He couldn't travel. So when the club was doing 5 games on the road in the U.S., he couldn't play any of those games. So a few months ago, he was released by the club. He's back in Cameroon with Coton Sport. But this situation made a big gap in the striker position for FC Montreal. And they would have had help with the big club if Cameron Porter and Jackson Amel and Romelu Williams would not have been released. Jackson Amel and Porter's injuries and the Drogba situation and Nadjuro playing more. So the striker situation of Montreal Impact affects the striker situation of FC Montreal. The fact that they didn't have any of those young fringe first team player to help them in the striker position for the second team. So that situation alone made a weird finishing goal. They scored 2 goals this season. So one of them was last week, a great goal by Chouanière in Bethlehem. You probably saw that on the USL Games of the Week and USL Play of the Week on the USLsoccer.com website. But outside of that, Dwayne, the 2 goals scored in a game. The striker position has been struggling because of injuries and rotation and bad luck, but it's just tough times in Montreal.
Yeah, and as we know, Montreal essentially uses it as an extension of the academy, more of a U23 team than anything else in there. But I'm wondering whether...
Literally.
Yeah, I'm wondering whether there might be a bit of a change in philosophy to address that goal scoring when Cameron Porter comes back, because he's going to need some time. Do you think he might get some minutes down there?
I do. It's been talked about by Mauro Biello saying there's a possibility that when Porter is actually ready, he has been starting to practice with the full team now, Cameron Porter, since a week and a half ago. So for him to actually get minutes with the FC Montreal, it is very possible right now. I do expect Cameron Porter to have a few starts with the FC Montreal to get his rhythm, because basically he didn't really play a meaningful game since early 2015, just the games after the great goal that we all remember Porter from the CONCACAF Champions League quarterfinals against Pachuca at the Southern APIC. After that goal, he played 2 games before the injury, I believe, as a substitute, but didn't really get a fair shot at playing a lot of minutes in a few years now, basically back to college. So maybe him playing 90 minutes for FC Montreal, 4-5 games, is what he needs right now.
All right, you've got some sound there from FC Montreal. Why don't you set that up, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap the show up.
Absolutely. We have Philippe Lafroy, coach of the FC Montreal and director of the academy, after the game with the captain of FC Montreal, Louis Bélan-Goyette.
If you're looking at the game at the end, around the 70th minute, 3 changed, you push for the win, literally. And for about 5 minutes, FC Montreal dominated. They had about 4 chances that Ballou created. And then it changed. It did the push for the attack expose the defense a little bit and cost a goal at the end of the match?
I don't know. The kids want to win, and then the staff want to win. So to win, you have to push a little bit and be unbalanced in the back sometimes. And so the thing is that again, we must be more efficient in the box, and that's what's missing. Because like you said, we have 4 or 5 good opportunities to score, and at the end we missed 4 or 5, and they had few, and they scored 1. So. Unfortunately for us, every time we're pushing, we get punished because we're not punishing the opponent. And that's the lesson that we have to learn. If every time we have an opportunity to kill them, we need to take it. Otherwise, it's happened to us, so we must be better.
Would you consider today's best performance of the season? They stayed close with the 3rd best team in the East.
No, I think the... We played one really bad game during the season. It's at Wilmington when we lost 2-0. It was not good at all. But all the other games, we were always like fighting for points. And unfortunately, it's not turning in our way. And we know that because we had the same situation last year. It was better when in July and in early August. So hopefully hopefully this year is going to be much earlier. And it's coming. You know, we can feel that it's we are closing us now to know that every time we start in the game, we have a good chance to gain some points. But obviously, we need to prove it.
Louis, 0-8, it's the same story as last year. Is there a feeling in the locker room that you desperately need that point or that win or just more goals? Is there a feeling of emergency in the team right now?
Yeah, I think there is a feeling of emergency, but still, we're still, you know, we come in the locker room and we think, we know we played well. It's just a result, so... Like I've been saying, it's gonna unblock one point, and we're gonna find a way to score. And once we find ways to score, we're gonna win the game.
Thanks to Louis Bellangayette and Philippe Lafroy, coach of the FC Montreal.
All right, Kevin, that'll wrap the show up for today. Before we go, why don't you let the listeners know some of the things, some of the initiatives that are going on the Sports Podcasting Network on the soccer side of things right now.
Absolutely. Well, starting with the Euros, June 6th, a few days before the Euro, you can get Soccer Today daily. You can find it on the YouTube page of the SPN Radio. So just look for SPN Radio on YouTube. You will find the page to subscribe, or even easier, go to sportspodcastingnetwork.com/SPN-radio. You will find the embedded link to listen to the show, prior episode of SPN Radio, as well as Open Lines After Dark and the MLS postgame show. The new tradition, your new favorite Saturday, late Saturday night tradition, if you're an MLS fan, 11 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Pacific, every Saturday night on SPN Radio. We will have sound from the games of the day. Tomorrow night, we'll have sound from the Montreal Galaxy game and sound from other collaborators around the league. Open lines as well for you to give your opinion on the MLS games of the day, your favorite moment, your controversies, the calls, the goals. You'll hear this on MLS Postgame Lives every Saturday night, 11 p.m. on SPN Radio, Dwayne.
All right. Sounds good, Kevin. As always, I'm going to let you say goodbye, but before I do, I'll tell you to get out there, continue to support local soccer, and go USL in those NASL matchups. Let's show them where they're at again, eh?
Why not? Yeah, exactly. It's a very interesting time, U.S. Open Cup, June 1st, the next round. So stay tuned to the Sports Podcast Network and USL Radio for more coverage of the U.S. Open Cup and for your support. We thank you for your support over the years on the Sports Podcast Network, and we ask you for a little more. Even more support will give you even more content, more live radio capabilities, more open lines, more everything. Our vision is close, but we're not there yet. And together, we need your help. Go to patreon.com. That's patreon.com/Sports Podcasting Network. $1 a month, $2 a month, or take the deep dive, take the pledge of the $10 a month subscription and be able to jump the queue in Open Line Show. And until next time on USL Radio, have a great soccer.
You were listening to SPN, the Sports Podcasting Network. Visit us, sportspodcastingnetwork.com.